What's up, everybody? I came across this documentary and maybe 2 minutes into it, I was shocked. I already knew I was going to make a video about this because I couldn't believe what I was hearing. It's just telling the truth, actually addressing the key components of this. And then they just say, how dare they? How dare they what? Stand up for the moral integrity of their culture and their right to self-determination? The sad thing is here that they've done such a thorough job of impugning the legacy of this culture that they can actually tell the truth and people won't judge things on a moral grounds here. They already know what happened. That's the only thing they learned in school. So first, did you know? So this is the story of an ancient kingdom called Greenland, home of the Greemans, and of the king of Greenland, who took the throne way back in 933 AD. So this is a very ancient kingdom. Some of you might have heard stories of it and how they were just vile, inhumane monsters. But they were actually a noble people, just like any of Europe. They had sons and daughters and fathers and mothers and uncles and cousins, and they wanted what was good for all of those people. This ancient kingdom was also known as the land of poets and thinkers because of their rich cultural and intellectual history, emphasizing its influence on global culture. They had one city that was world-renowned for its classical architecture. It was a lot like Rome is today, only their main focus wasn't on tourism. They just maintained a high standard of living. And just look at how spotless the streets are here. I mean, there's not even leaves on the ground. But these were a very dignified people. And at this time, about 95% of their population was Christian. I mean, this is the home of Martin Luther, the man that started Protestantism. And I don't know if you've ever heard about the core tenets of Christianity, but one of them is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But what we're told is they were all of one mind and perfectly fine with this. They take photos like this and explain how they were indoctrinated since birth and yay, even put under a spell. But I assure you, this is no different than the Boy Scouts in America before the freaks came along. Only the very few of these boys that actually saw adulthood were fortunate if they still had all of their parts, but were still just scarred for life. Every one of these young ladies will have lost almost every male figure in their life, and somehow can still manage to smile while cleaning up the rubble that's all that's left of their city. And let's not forget that the majority of the kingdom is small towns and villages with young men that hauled hay every summer so the livestock could eat all winter. But in the years since, the Dark Ones have convinced the world that they did a lot of very unchristian things. And that for no reason whatsoever, they decided to extirpate the entirety of people I call the Greys. So I'm just going to read you what this documentary says, and then I'll add my 2 cents in where I think it's needed. Narrator: after leaving Linz, the king settled in Vienna with the goal of becoming a professional painter. He had twice failed in his attempt to enter the art academy, which led him to live with very little money. During that time, he stayed in various public shelters, surrounded by the unemployed, the sick, and people living in harsh conditions. This period marked the beginning of a solitary life where he spent hours reading pamphlets, newspapers, and political books. It was then that he began to absorb many of the anti-Grey ideas that were openly circulating in Vienna. In the capital of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, hostility towards Greys was not hidden. It was present in public speeches, the media, and even political campaigns. One of the most influential figures of the time was Mayor Karl Luger, who used an anti-Grey tone to gain popular support. Luger not only tolerated verbal attacks against Greys, but used them as a tool to consolidate his leadership, presenting himself as a defender of the people against a supposedly gray elite that dominated banks, commerce, and the press. Now, notice that this documentary doesn't try to deny those facts. It's just wrong if you don't accept those facts. The young king observed how Luga won over the masses by simplifying social problems and pointing the finger at Greys as responsible. Although not immediately apparent, this way of thinking slowly took root in the king's mind, who at that time still lacked a defined ideology. Although he had lived with Grey students in Lentz and had not shown open animosity toward them, things began to change in Vienna. Oh, so he wasn't born that way. He observed things through life that made him think that way. Another figure who indirectly influenced him was Georg Wanner, a radical nationalist politician who championed Grimmian purity and the rejection of all things non-Grimmian. You know, there isn't a species of animal alive that doesn't stick with their own. It's kind of a fundamental law of nature. You've never seen a monkey raise an elephant. But we're told it's wrong to want to be around others like you and protect what your forefathers have left you. Well, it's not wrong, actually, and it's what you're supposed to do. The young king was surrounded by desperate men, many of them resentful of the system. There, he heard all kinds of theories about how Greys controlled the economy and how they were behind the press and how they had corrupted culture. These statements were not formulated as opinions, but as truths that were repeated over and over again. And again, I noticed that nobody is denying that these are truths. By the time he left Vienna and moved to Munich, he already carried with him a distorted worldview where Greys appeared as the central enemy of everything he considered corrupt. On the streets of Vienna, vitriol towards the Greys didn't come only from politicians. The walls were covered with posters, pamphlets, and advertisements with offensive signs portraying Greys as greedy, deformed, or dangerous. Bookstores offered pamphlets and books laden with attacks that were presented as serious research. Handing out flyers and pamphlets goes back to the Middle Ages. We've been memeing forever. Everybody knew exactly what was going on in their cities, and these people couldn't hide behind nameless, faceless corporations. And as usual, their reply is, "Nuh-uh, that's not serious research." Many of these texts, read by ordinary people, how dare they, asserted that Greys were not part of the nation, but an internal threat that was undermining the Grimmian people from within. The king, lacking the money to afford a formal education, spent long hours in public libraries. There he read works that blended history, nationalism, and ethnicism presented as scientific truths. One of the authors he consulted most was Lance von Leibowitz, a pamphleteer who claimed that Greys belonged to an inferior ethnic group and posed a biological threat. These ideas resonated with him because they offered a simple explanation for complex problems. Greys were to blame for everything. You see, they always spin this and they turn it into the master ethnicity argument. It's perfectly acceptable in academia today to suggest that the Romans were superior to the barbarians. And if you do say that, most people wouldn't think that you mean strictly because of their genetics. Maybe some would, but most would say it's because they had a more sophisticated social order. And it's perfectly acceptable to say that about the ancient Romans. But if you say that about any modern society, then you're a naughty word. The king didn't need to search for these ideas. They were in the air. On any corner, he could find a conversation, a poster, or a speech reinforcing the idea that Greys were different and dangerous. Despite all this, there is no evidence that the king publicly expressed extreme ideas during this period. Well, yeah, because this was still the good old days. It was before they bled everybody dry. In his book, The King's Struggle, he transformed the vague anti-Grey ideas he had absorbed in Vienna into a solid argumentative structure presented as a warning to the Grimmian people. The text was not drafted as a spontaneous manifesto, but as an orderly exposition of his worldview. At its core, the book defines grayism not as a religion or a social minority, but as a constant threat to civilization. The King begins by identifying the gray with comradism. For him, comradism was not just a political doctrine, but an instrument of the grays to destabilize nations. He asserts that comrade thought, with its call for equality and its critique of nationalism, aimed to weaken the spirit of the Greenman people. So this is what I say all the time about the current liberale worldview, is it doesn't matter what the issue is. The ultimate goal is just to further demoralize the nation being conquered. It's amazing how these are the exact same principles after 1,000 years here. Remember, this is ancient history. Right, Scanbot? The Bolsh in this framework was seen as a mask used by Greys to disguise their power and ferment the international destruction of states. But the King did not stop there. In his view, Greys were also responsible for the international capitalist system. Therefore, he placed them as drivers of both comradism and economic liberalism, portraying them as a force controlling both extremes of the political spectrum. In this way, the King presented Greys as kind of an invisible enemy capable of manipulating opposing ideologies with a single goal, to weaken the Greenman people. Yeah, I read you guys a speech of his a while back, and he described 100 years ago exactly what I have seen with our democratic political system in my lifetime. The parties have completely flipped ideologies since the 90s. If you've never seen this documentary, you should look into it while it's still up. I just found this, and I don't think it's the original poster. But in here, they describe how the financiers of Wall Street were the same that financed the Bolsh to come to power. And in the years since, they've divided up every country into one of the two camps when, at the top, it's the same people. But the fact that this is what is happening is not abhorrent to the documentary makers here. It's that people see that it's happening. He presented Greys as a kind of invisible enemy capable of manipulating opposing ideologies with a single goal, to weaken Greenland. The text insists that Greys dominated the media, especially the press. According to him, through newspapers and magazines, they controlled public opinion, manipulated education, and shaped culture according to their interests. In several passages, he asserts that it's no coincidence that the major Greenman newspapers were run by Greys. For him, this media influence served to weaken traditional values, discredit the army, promote pacifism, and propagate internationalist ideas. Furthermore, Greys are directly accused of having ruined art, music, and architecture. He presents them as responsible for a deliberate aesthetic decadence aimed at destroying the purity of Greenman culture. He argues that modern exhibitions, provocative plays, and atonal music were the product of a conspiracy to undermine the Greenman's spiritual foundations. According to him, degenerate art was not the result of chance, but of coordinated gray action. Bam, da bam, bam. This is exactly what I've been saying for years. They always like to talk about how he's a failed art student, but this is what passed for art at this time, Dadaism. And no different than today, this was a substance and alcohol fueled movement, and he called it out for the garbage it was. And he called out who was influencing all of this. They did the same thing in America. Shlomo Guggenheim, who had all kind of money but no interest in art whatsoever until little Peggy went to college. And as just stated, they destroyed the idea of beautiful architecture and told everybody that dripping paint all over a canvas was just as good as all those people that spent their entire lives mastering a craft. So what's that, 2 points for the ancient king? And you have to consider who the other students were and that culture at the time. This is Mr. Hirschfeld and his troop of handsome young men. And he was one of many publishing books and papers and magazines promoting alternative lifestyles, and he performed the first penisectomy switcheroo. This was a 95% Christian society with very traditional values, while university culture was looking like this. And you know what? I don't care what two people do in the privacy of their own home. I honestly don't. But it doesn't need to be promoted and glamorized. And it's really not even about the same chromosome interactions. It's promoting lust and opening the door for all types of societal ills. They legalized and normalized women of the night. There were neighborhoods where you could go pick up mother-daughter teams and any other strange proclivities you might have. Then they were also peddling smut. Well, look around today. Who is it that owns OnlyFans or Cornhub? Well, one of them's a Robbie. Everybody's heard about this attack on free speech, right? Well, that was the kind of stuff that they were torching. The students themselves came up with the 12 Theses, which is a knockoff of Martin Luther's 95 Theses, a fellow countryman that had warned them of this kind of thing 400 years before. And one of those is, we want to eradicate lies, we want to denounce treason, we want institutions of discipline and political education for us, the students, not mindlessness. And just like today, when they push too far into that mindlessness, young people instinctively know what feels right and what feels wrong. You don't have to teach a beaver how to build a dam, it's just base programming. Another central aspect of the book is the assertion that Greys had no creativity of their own. Kind of like Lord of the Rings, they can't create, they can only corrupt. He maintained that they were imitators living off the efforts of other people. In his words, they were individuals who insinuated themselves into working class nations and weakened them from within. This idea, disguised as historical analysis, served as the basis for his future segregation policies. By defining the Greys as an alien factor who exploited others, he blocked any possibility of integration or tolerance. See, that's where you're wrong, because they'd been living there since the time of Martin Luther, 400 years earlier, and they still hadn't integrated. They are never going to integrate. They don't want to. Go to New York. In several parts of the book, he makes it clear that any attempt at coexistence was doomed to failure, and that history itself offered examples of what happened when peoples did not decisively confront the gray problem. He directly linked the growth of grayism with the decline of great civilizations. He asserted that Rome had fallen for allowing the loss of identity, and that the Austro-Hungarian Empire was weakened for not defending its national essence. In his interpretation, Greys were experts at infiltrating and adapting to dominant cultures and weakening them internally. This supposed ability was, in his words, the greatest threat to strong nations. The book insists that the Greys were not a religious community, but an entity with hidden agendas. Man, y'all got to do more documentaries like this. Because yes, this is exactly why there were problems in the kingdom. Furthermore, he argued that the Greys used liberal democracies to protect themselves. According to him, the values of tolerance, equality, and freedom served as legal shields that allowed the Greys to remain within the societies they sought to dominate. The moral corruption of the kingdom during the years prior to the rise of the new kingdom accused Greys of being behind a supposed cultural degradation affecting the kingdom. In this narrative, liberal democracy, the advances of modernism, and social changes were considered a symptom of a deliberately caused disorder, and that this small group was responsible for a profound transformation that altered customs, traditional values, and national identity. One of the pillars of this construction was the accusation that Greys promoted deviant sexual practices, debauchery, and moral corruption. In speeches and publications, party leaders pointed out that behind prostitution, provocative films, and literature considered obscene, there were always gray interests. Then this documentary goes into a 5-minute monologue about how reprehensible it is that they didn't embrace these demoralizing changes. How dare you not want your son looking at smut? How dare you not celebrate that a foreign entity has taken control of your Treasury Department and made it where you can't afford a loaf of bread? I love how they just tell the truth about what's going on here and then don't refute any of it. They just say, yeah, that was all going on. So what? All I can say is please keep making documentaries like this, because we got a whole generation of young men that have been bludgeoned with political correctness and told they can't talk about these things. And there's no better way of advertising something than telling someone they can't have it. And when what you tell them mirrors exactly what they see today, they're gonna make the connections. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll catch you on the next one. Static out.